everybody, Bob Claster here, and I'm your host for Funny Stuff, half an hour of comedy that airs every week here on KCRW, Friday nights at 7:30. And first of all, before we get down to the business of comedy, I'd like to thank all of you that supported us during the pledge drive. It was an overwhelming show of support, and it really feels good to all of us that work very hard around here at KCRW. And now on to the business of comedy. Tonight we're going to be listening to Groucho Marx, and it's a wonderful quote by Woody Allen about Groucho Marx, which I shall read to you now. Some years back, after a childhood of preoccupation with comedy that led to observing the styles of all of the great comedians, I came to the conclusion that Groucho Marx was the best comedian this country ever produced. Now I am more convinced than ever that I was right. I can't think of a comedian who combined a totally original physical conception that was hilarious with a matchless verbal delivery. I believe that there is a natural, inborn greatness in Groucho that defies close analysis as it does with any genuine artist. He is simply unique in the way that Picasso or Stravinsky are, and I believe his outrageous, unsentimental disregard for order will be equally as funny 1,000 years from now. In addition to this, he makes me laugh. And he made a lot of people laugh in his life, and what we're going to hear tonight are excerpts from a concert that he gave towards the end of his life, where he was reminiscing and telling stories. And I'm sorry that there isn't time to play the whole thing because it really is very charming. It's got Marvin Hamlisch at the keyboard. And without any further ado, allow me to present to you the one, the only, Groucho.
How I got started in show business. I saw an ad in the Morning World, which doesn't exist anymore. And hardly do I. The ad said boy wanted to sing. I ran all the way from 93rd Street, where I lived then, to 33rd Street, and ran up 5 flights of stairs. I knocked on the door, and a man came to the door wearing a woman's outfit. Not entirely, just lipstick. And I realized that that was the profession that I wanted to enter. I better start talking about my family first, I guess. There's quite a group of them. Can you hear me out there? You're not missing anything. Luckily, I can't hear it either. Well, I had a family. I had Harpo played the harp. That was pretty obvious. And Chico was what they used to call a chicken chaser. And in England now, they call them birds, which is the equivalent of a chicken chaser in America 50 years ago. He did very well with that, too. And Zeppo was born when the Zeppelin arrived in Lakehurst, New Jersey. He had nothing to do with the arrival. My other brother, Gummo, it's not his real name. His real name was Milton. It seemed like such a silly name. And we used to call him Gumshoes because somebody had given him a pair of rubbers. In a nice way, I mean. And that's his name, Gummo Marx. My name, of course, I never did understand. I had an uncle named Julius. He was well over 4 feet. And I was named after him because we were under some peculiar impression that he had money. As a matter of fact, my father wanted to throw him out of the house. But my mother said, no, I remember I read a story once in which a man was supposed to be broke. And when he died, he left a lot of money, so they named me Julius. He never worked anyhow, he was just in the house sitting there. He finally died. And he left a will. His will consisted of a celluloid dickie, an 8-ball, and 3 razor blades. And besides, he owed my father $85. which he never did get from him. And Chico was the gambler of the family. He pawned everything. My father was a tailor, and a very bad one. And Chico was always short of money, and he used to hawk my father's shears. So whenever my father made a suit, of course it didn't fit. And the shears would be hanging up in the pawn shop in 91st Street. Chico got a job at Clauber Horn and Company. They used to manufacture paper, different kinds of paper. And Chico never brought home a salary, because he was always in the pool room or he was someplace, and he never brought a salary. And my father told him, he says, next week, if you come home without your salary, I'll kill you. They had a very close relationship. Chico didn't know what to do. His father was laying for him, in a nice way, I mean. And Chico entered apprehensively. There was my father waiting for him. And Chico says, Dad, I got a great surprise for you. They had a sale today on paper. And I took the $3 that I was supposed to bring home, and I bought this paper. And my father opened it, and it was toilet paper. It was the first time we had ever seen toilet paper in our life. We had always used either the Morning World or the Herald Tribune. And when I was real young, before that, I used to smoke it. I'd smoke it up into a small bowl and then light it. It was very good. It was a very peculiar family. I had an uncle who was a chiropodist. He would come to your house and he'd have a small suitcase and he would cut your toenails for 25 cents. Then he got a job. Because there's not much money in cutting toenails for 25 cents. And it was cold, it was winter. So he got a job setting fire to hotels in the Catskills. Then he was so good at this that they finally transferred him and they gave him a job in the Adirondacks, where they had much bigger hotels to buy and sell. He finally wound up in Sing Sing. Soon we were in vaudeville, and I was a jamming comedian with a spade beard. I was dressed like my uncle Al Sheen, with Gallagher and Sheen in those days. That was my mother's brother. I don't know if you remember him, but he used to sing, "Oh, Mr. Gallagher, oh, Mr. Gallagher, what's on your mind this morning, Mr. Sheen?" So I became a jamming comedian. And we were playing in Shays, Toronto, when the Lusitania was sunk in the First World War. I was supposed to sing a song, a German song. But I was afraid if I did, they were going to kill me, that audience. I'm going to sing the song for you now. I once knew a woman who couldn't spell cat. Her face was as homely as cinch. In winter, she always wore last summer's hat, and a size 11 shoe was a pinch. When she played piano, strong men would faint, and weak men would cry out in grief. And as for her singing, well, it made you feel that it wasn't so tough to be deep. But with all these things that the people would say, her voice and her looks couldn't drive them away. 'Cause, oh, how that woman could cook. Her breath is like angel fool's cake. She could take soup meat and give it one look, and right away it was porterhouse steak. Her pfannkuchen, what a beautiful dream. Her tripe was like peaches and cream, and with the table between us, she looked exactly like Venus. Oh, God, how that woman could cook. Well, obviously, with the Lusitania laying at the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean, I'd have got killed if I sang that song in Canada. So I put some makeup on him, and I made myself a Jew comedian, which I'd never been. I'd never been a Jew comedian. And I sang this song. Mr. and Mrs. Klein, they lived a life so fine until the relatives came. Uncle and Tante Wolf brought all the little wolves. Like wolves, they lived up to their name. One week went by, Klein started to cry. It looks like the wolves mean to stay. So he told his wife one night that while they were sleeping tight, let's leave them and we'll run away. Say, it's better Toronto, Toronto, than to live in a place you don't want to. With 20 wolves in front of me, my house looks like a menagerie. Imagine the cheek from the Tanta to bring all them wolves from Toronto, and oy, how they can eat at least a pound of meat. Say, they take what they want to. Just think what the bills will amount to. Every day they're growing more and more. They eat one meal a day, that's right. They start in the morning and finish at night. It's going to be a cold, cold winter, and I can't keep the wolves from the door. Speaking of Waterville, there used to be a critic in Chicago when we played there by the name of Percy Hammer. This is about 30 years ago, I guess. He was on the Chicago Tribune. And he reviewed our act. We did a big act, and we had about 25 people in the act. And he reviewed the act. And the next morning, this was the review. He said, the Marx Brothers and their various relatives ran around the stage for almost an hour yesterday afternoon. Why, I'll never understand. He was a tough guy. During the Second World War, years later, the Chicago Tribune correspondent had died. They had to get a new guy to go over and cover the war. And they had a big meeting one day. They had Ring Lardner there. And they had the whole staff of the Chicago Tribune. And somebody suggested sending Percy Hammond over, this critic who had reviewed our act. And Ring Lardner says, no, no, you can't do that. Suppose he doesn't like the war. How many of you have read the George Kaufman book? Nobody, huh? He was a close friend of mine. He was a hell of a playwright. And he was also a show doctor. And I remember one of the Bloomingdale department store family was producing a show and opening it in Philadelphia. And they invited George Kaufman to come down there and see the show because it needed a little help. And Kaufman went down and sat in the second or third row. And when the show was over, the fellow from the Bloomingdale's, he came down the audience and he said to George, he said, How about the show? How'd you like it? And Kaufman said, tell you what you do. Close the show and keep the store open at nights. Once we were on the bill with Fanny Bryce, I'm sure a lot of you remember Fanny Bryce. She was quite a performer. And on the bill, too, there was an act called Swains, Rats, and Cats. Now, you wouldn't believe that, but that was the name of the act. And they had a miniature racetrack on the stage. And the rats were dressed as jockeys, and the cats were horses. It was an incredible act, imagine. Teaching these cats and rats to learn all this. And they wore the uniforms, too. And one day, while they were doing the act, there was a scream came from Fanny's dressing room. And Swain ran in there. And he had a Turkish towel with him. He didn't know what he was going to... Fanny Bryce is standing on a chair, frightened to death, got her clothes away up. Swain grabs this rat. It wasn't one of the rats from his act. This was a sewer rat that had got into the theater. Well, Swain captured this sewer rat. And the next year, we played on a bill with Swain again, and this rat was now the star of the show. When we did Animal Crackers, we needed 2 minutes for a change, a scenery change. So I wrote a ridiculous poem. And I always think of whether the audience is really listening to the actor on the stage. I wrote the most ridiculous poem you could possibly write and tried it on the audience. And the first 10 weeks we did the show, we used to get a sophisticated New York audience. And they used to laugh, and they used to applaud at the end. And then you start getting the out-of-towners, people from the Middle West. And they thought I was serious. And this is the way it goes. Did you ever sit and ponder as you walk along the Strand that life's a bit of battle at the best? And if you only knew it and would lend a helping hand, then every man could meet the final test. The world is but a stage, my friend, and life is but a game. And how you play is all that matters in the end. For whether a man is right or wrong, a woman gets the blame. And your mother is your dog's best friend. Then up came Mighty Casey and strode up to the bat. And Sheridan was 50 miles away. For it takes a heap of loving to make a home like that on the road to where the flying fishes play. Then I used to take a chair, which the vaudeville actors used to do in those days, and I would start walking off the stage. And the last line would be, so be a real-life polyarch and laugh, clown, laugh. Years ago, there were many songs written about mothers. You know, like Mammy and Ireland Must Be Heaven. Mom, They're Making Eyes at Me. My Mother's Eyes. But nobody ever wrote any song about fathers. Father was the town schlemiel in almost every place. He was nothing. Mother was the boss. I think there were two songs that I remember. Pop Goes the Weasel. And Oh, What a Crumb Is My Old Man. And I remember one more song. It was called Everybody Works But Father. He sits around all day feet in front of the fireplace, smoking his pipe of clay. Mother takes in washing, so does Sister Ann. Everybody works in our house, but my old man. That was a big hit, that song. And they even sang it in Europe, in Germany. Alle Schaft haben ich Vater, er geht den ganzen Tag herum. In Rauch die verdammte Pfeife, das alles geht drüber und rum. Und Mutter nimmt den Washing, und auch tut Schwester an. Alle arbeiten in unser Platz, aber nicht der alte Mann. I have a friend in Hollywood. I think I do. I'm not so sure of him. His name is Harry Ruby. And he wrote a lot of songs that I've sung over the years. Today, Father is Father's Day. And we're giving you a tie. It's not much, you know. It is just our way of showing you. We think you're a regular guy. You say that it was nice of us to bother, but it really was a pleasure to fuss. For according to our mother, you're our father, and that's good enough. Good enough for us. Okay. I was once invited to Cecil DeMille's projection room, and they were running Samson and Delilah with Hedy Lamarr and Victor Mature. I'm sure many of you had seen that picture sometime or other. So and Cecil DeMille came up to me when the picture was over, and he said, how did you like the picture? I said, it'll be a failure. And he said, why? Why will it be a failure? Well, because you got the characters wrong. Victor Mature has much bigger knockers than Hedy Lamarr. And they never asked me at the Paramount again. I was in Montreal, and a priest comes up to me, puts out his hand, he says, I want to thank you for all the joy you put into this world. And I shook his hand, and I said, and I want to thank you for all the joy you've taken out of this world. He said, could I use that next Sunday in my sermon? I said, yes, you can, but you'll have to pay the William Morris office 10%. I was in Italy. I was in Rome. Wonderful city. And I just lit a dollar cigar, and I was walking to the corner, and somebody bumped against me. And this is a dollar cigar. I wasn't going to let it lay there. So I reached down to pick it up, and it says, Jesus Christ. And I turn around, there's two priests standing next to me. And one of them had bumped against me. And he reached in here and pulled out two cigars. He says, Groucho, you just said the secret word. What do you want to do? Maybe? Lydia, oh Lydia, say have you met Lydia? She has eyes that men adore so, and a torso even more so. Lydia, oh Lydia, that encyclopedia, Lydia, the queen of tattoo. On her back is the Battle of Waterloo, beside it the wreck of the Hesperus too, and proudly above waves the red, white, and blue. You can learn a lot from Lydia.
La 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 la.
When a robe is unfurled, she will show you the world if you'll step up and tell her where. For a dime you can see Kankakee or Paris or Washington crossing the Delaware.
La 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 la.
Oh Lydia, oh Lydia, say have you met Lydia? Lydia the tattooed lady. When her muscles start relaxing, up the hill comes Andrew Jackson. That encyclopedia, Lydia the queen of tattoo. For 2 bits she will do a mazurka in jazz, with a view of Niagara that nobody has. And on a clear day you can see Alcatraz. You can learn a lot from Lydia.
La 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 la.
Come along and see Buffalo Bill with his class. Just a little classic by Mendel Picasso. His Captain Spaulding exploring the Amazon. His Godiva but with her pajamas on.
La 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 la.
Oh Lydia, oh Lydia, say have you met Lydia? Lydia, the queen of them all. She once swept an admiral clear off his feet. The ships on her hips made his heart skip a beat. And now the old boy's in command of the fleet. For he went and married Lydia. I said Lydia.
He said Lydia.
I said Lydia.
He said Lydia.
Oh, Lydia.
And there you have it. Again, I there was so much wonderful stuff that I had to cut out from that. It really is a shame. But that was An Evening with Groucho Marx, the one and the only fabulous Groucho Marx. And let's see, what else is there to tell you? Oh, yes, I will be appearing on another radio station during the upcoming week. Tuesday afternoon at 3:30 on KIEV, which is 870 AM. I can be heard on, I will be able to be heard on the famous Computer Cafe, discussing something which has little or nothing to do with comedy. So you might tune in and maybe give us a call in if you like. It's a call-in show. That's KIEV 870 AM from 3:30 to 4 this Tuesday afternoon. What else? Duck's Breath Mystery Theater at my place this weekend. I'll be there Saturday night. What else? That's about it, I think. Once again, thanks for listening. Next week's program is going to be a 4th of July spectacular. Listeners will be requested politely to listen standing with your hand over your heart. And that's about it. Until next week, this is your host, Bob Plaster, really thanking you sincerely for listening. And I hope you can join me next week, and reminding you to always keep that sense of humor well exercised, because you never know when you're going to need it. Good night, everybody.